You're listening to Catholic Chicago Week in Review on Relevant Radio 950 AM and 930 AM. During the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago brings you conversation about the people, events, and issues that touch our lives. Welcome to Catholic Chicago Week in Review.
Good morning. I'm Jim Dish with the Archdiocese of Chicago's Radio TV office, joining you on Relevant Radio 950 and 930 AM. Every Saturday morning, we bring you highlights of our Catholic Chicago radio programs that air throughout the week. Our broadcast week got off to a great start with Catholic Chicago, hosted by Holy Name Cathedral Rector Father Greg Sackowitz and Graziano Marcheschi of Shalom Media. They were joined by a group of brothers for an on-air celebration of Religious Brothers Day.
We're speaking today with three religious brothers, representative of the vocation to the brotherhood as we anticipate the celebration of Religious Brothers Day, which is coming up. When is that going to be? I don't see that.
Wednesday, May 1st, this coming Wednesday.
Wednesday, May 1st.
St. Joseph the Worker.
Okay, coincides with the Feast of St. Joseph the Worker. So these are hardworking guys, many of them involved in the Ministry of Education. We're talking with brothers James McDonald, Gregory Smith, and Michael Segvich. Gentlemen, I'd like to ask if you could just give us a quick overview of the ministries that you've been involved with. You've all been brothers for probably about 40 years, 50 years? Wow. So that's a long time to be ministering.
They're old.
They're old. Almost as old as we are.
Oh, wow. We're all old. Yeah. Older.
So tell us about who would like to go first. Brother Jim?
We could do that.
All right.
For the most part of my career as a brother, I was a teacher, and I taught biology and chemistry for the most part, and a little bit of physics. And I also coached. I taught at St. Lawrence in Burbank. I taught at Brother Rice in Chicago. Taught at O'Day High School in Seattle. Was also the vocation minister for our province for 17 years.
Wow. Go back one second. What sport did you coach?
I coached swimming, water polo, diving.
Wow.
That was at Brother Rice. And I also coached golf in Seattle for 15 years.
What years were you at St. Lawrence?
1966 to 1972.
Okay, all right, sure.
He sounds so young. He sounds like he's 25
years old.
75, about a month ago.
75?
I'm 75 years old, yes.
You sound much, much younger. Which is tremendous.
I'm not going to talk about what I look like, though.
You know what they say, well, you can fool some of the people some of the time.
And the thing I would like to speak to, if I may, is my association with what I call the retreat programs, campus ministry, especially at O'Day in Seattle, because I was in Chicago from like 66 to 88. It was mostly teaching and coaching. But when I got to Seattle, I was still teaching and I mentioned coaching golf, but I got into what's called the County Retreat Program. And I found out that these young people, they may smile all over the place, and there could be the vast majority, but inside they have pains and hurts. And these retreat programs give them a phenomenal opportunity to speak to that and to get some healing and then to find out that, you know, we can be talked to. So I've had a lot of young people come to the classroom after school and before school to talk about how they're feeling, totally unrelated to teaching and coaching.
Yeah.
Would you go back to that relationship? And Greg, your ministries over the years?
Well, mostly teaching. I'm similar to Jim, science teacher, but my last teaching job was at St. Lawrence from 2005 to 2015, and I taught physics, and I was the campus minister.
That's true.
Boy, I bet the brothers were thrilled to have you two guys, because science teachers are always hard to find.
They are.
And to have them within your own community, that's great.
Yes.
That'd be terrific. I remember, with your name, Gregory, I remember when I see Christian brother Gregory Smith. Whenever I was a kid, whenever I was in trouble, I was Gregory. So if I was Greg, I was in good shape. If my mother or father said, "Gregory, come here," I'm not having a good day. When I see Gregory, it just brings back memories of my childhood.
But I spent a number of years in parish work. I preceded and followed Jim in vocation work, which is what I'm doing now. But previously, when I was in vocation work, I met a bishop, and he invited me to come and work in his diocese. So I did rural parish ministry in Western Kentucky for 8 years. So I had a little change out of the classroom, and then I came back into the classroom.
It's interesting that the three of you with religious life, you know, as I'm listening, I'm seeing Michael here in studio, and then with Greg and with Jim on radio, you sound so joy-filled, and for all these years, I get the impression, as the years have gone by, it is stronger, it made your vocation stronger.
That's true, and a lot of it has to do with the young people I hope we've been able to influence for the good over the years, and many of whom I still keep in touch with, and because I've had some assignments literally across the United States, I've got good friends and past pupils I've had that I keep in touch with in California and Michigan, New York, and of course here in Chicago.
Well, it sounds like brothers never get to retire.
We don't know what we do if we fully retire.
All right, so let's turn to the young brother in the group here, Father Michael. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Brother Michael. Tell us about the ministries that you've been involved in your years.
Well, as Brother Jim and Brother Greg said as well, I've been in education. I celebrated my golden jubilee as a Christian brother last year.
Wow.
And my silver anniversary as a principal.
Oh, congratulations, Michael.
Thank you. I was an emergency replacement at St. William Grammar School on the northwest side of the city. Literally last minute, I was hired at 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, and school began 7:30 the next morning.
I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, so I have great appreciation for grammar. I always did for Catholic grammar school. Do a wonderful job preparing the young people for
high
school.
You were St. Williams for how long?
Just the 1 year.
One year.
Yeah, yeah. And I was looking for keys for my office when I got there the next morning or that. But
so when you were teaching, what subjects did you teach?
I was mostly social studies and theology.
All right.
And I ended up, I taught full-time for 9 years at Brother Ice in Michigan. And then at the end of those 9 years, I got a call from our province leader. And his comment was, he said, we want you to relocate to Salinas, California, in the heart of lettuce country on the central coast of the Golden State. And he said, we would like you to be the principal of Palma High School there. I was only 30 years old at the time. And I said to the brother provincial, I said, I don't know anything about being a principal. And I'll never forget his response.
You'll learn.
You did a great job as the hockey coach. So changing the lines every 45 seconds and not getting
like
hit by the puck.
Right?
That was my preparation.
That's a great response.
You did a great job as
the hockey coach. Mm-hmm. A question for all three of you. You've been teaching with young people 30, 40, 50 years plus. What are the biggest changes you have seen among young people in the last half century in teaching? I don't mean to throw a curveball, but for example, all three of you could have taught me classes. No, I take it back. I was class of 71 from high school. So
He's rubbing in our faces young he is.
But the point is, you know, maybe a little bit, no. It the changes of young people. Michael, throw the question at you first.
Yeah, I think the sophistication of young people, and I think I'd have to relate it to the advancement of the technology. You know, when I was teaching, when I first started teaching, our technology was a piece of chalk and an eraser. Now to find a blackboard in a school, literally, you know. And young people, I think, are so much more proficient with the technology than I am that, you know, you go to a kid and ask him how to turn on your computer. Mm-hmm. Or I can remember when I was at St. Lawrence and I had to print out a ticket for a social event, and the kid was able
to help you.
Have him come in and do it for me or that. So
sophistication. How about you for either Greg or Jim?
Well, this is Jim. I'll give you a quick step. I actually haven't been in the classroom for about the past, 17 years because of my ministry. But now that I'm back, I'm working with the president here, Brother Rice, in Bloomfield Hills. And the thing that I see the most is these kids walking around with these iPads in front of their faces.
Yeah,
that's all they see. You know, they're staring at these things. I think they're mesmerized by them. And to the library seems not non-existent anymore. There's no such thing as books. They're all into their laptops. And I think they're pulling away from reality. That's my own thoughts on that.
How about you, Greg?
I think kids are more of a challenge in learning how to teach them these days. Problem solving. A lot of kids today, I think, they don't know how to problem solve because they don't have to. You know, there are answers so available in technology that that's the way that they look for answers. When I was a kid in high school, I used the slide rule, you know. And so we had to have a better idea of whether an answer was generally right or not. I hate to say it this way, and some people might not like this, but I think we're using STEM curriculum today to get kids to problem solve the way we used to do it automatically.
Hmm. Now, that's an interesting comment.
Hmm. Yeah.
Say more about that.
Well, like I said, kids can find answers so conveniently that where we had to really work them out. And so kids today have to be taught how to work things out because things are so easy to research today. I mean, like, imagine if you told a kid they couldn't use their computer, they had to use a card catalog, you know, and go through stacks of books to find answers.
They'd be lost.
Yeah. But that's not a bad thing. It's different. I want to make that sure. I don't want to say it's bad. I want to say it's different.
And our congratulations to Father Greg, who is observing a milestone this weekend. He's been a priest for 40 years. He will celebrate the 1 o'clock Mass at Holy Name Cathedral tomorrow. It will be a celebration of his 40th anniversary of the priesthood. God bless you, Father Greg, for all the wonderful things you do for the people of this archdiocese. Next up in this broadcast week, Deacon John Cook talked with Sister Jamie Phelps about everything from the aging process to the significance of Bible study.
I just love talking to you. You're just you have a wealth of information, and it's just fun talking to you. But sister, you are considered, obviously, retired, but you're still a freelance theologian. And
correct.
You also have a doctorate in systematic, what is it?
Theology.
Theology, right?
Systematic theology, correct.
So what does that mean?
Well, systematic theology is just one of the many disciplines. It covers the areas of major themes within the church: God, Christ, church, grace. And it takes us into thinking about who God is in God's self and who God is in us. And we, it's an expansion of what you learn when you learn the Ten Commandments, an expansion of what you've learned in the catechism. But it's constantly... what we do is we look at human experience, and we're looking for signs of God's grace and presence in that human experience. And we wrestle with questions like, who is God? Who is God for us? Who is Jesus Christ? Who is Jesus Christ for us? What is it to be a human being? That's the theological anthropology piece. What does it mean to be truly human from a Christian perspective? God, Christ, church, grace, history. We cover all of that broad range. It's a depth reflection on who God is in our lives and the lives of our community, our church, and our world.
Question.
Go ahead.
So how soon should one ponder that question? Or how soon is it that you start asking the question for, let's say, a young person?
Well, first of all, every human being asks that the essential, what we call the existential question.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I? Where am I going? What am I supposed to do? At some level, that question comes very early in life.
Mm-hmm.
It gets the responses gets broader and deeper. But that's part of me, even in psychology. We talk about that. How does that baby get to know who he or she is?
Yes.
how he is in relationship to people's responses and how their parents shape them in terms of values and relationships to other people. So it's an existential question. It's a question of existence. Mm. Who am I? What is my purpose? And where am I going? And depending on what kind of support they have in their family, in their parish, in their schools, in the church, people can find their way, and they finally discover what their gifts are and why God created them, because I believe God created every person for a purpose and has gifted us. And we have to figure out what our gift is and what our purpose is. And when we discover that, we are happy.
Oh, Lord, now, yes. Yes, yes,
it's not just one thing, though. I mean, I've lived 77 years. I've done 1,000 things. But
right.
It's sort of like, how am I supposed to use the gift that God has given me for the benefit of the community, for the benefit of the church, for the benefit of the world? That's the Christian perspective.
Yes.
God, what do they say? Jesus was a man for others. Mm. We are supposed to be human beings for others. Our mothers and fathers were for us. We wouldn't have gotten where we were if our parents hadn't guided us, denied themselves sometimes for our education, for whatever they gave us, both personally and financially.
So, sister, you know, I'm so fortunate, and so are my siblings, to have two parents that have raised us, you know, with that knowledge of who God is. And I think that that question was asked of me, if not directly, you know, it certainly was incumbent upon me to kind of find my way and learn that. You know, I recall very early on sort of having thoughts of, you know, who I was and, you know, who God was and who he was to me, you know, and how he felt about me. I certainly knew that as a young kid, but I look at so many young people today and they don't even know God, let alone care to know.
And to some extent, we have to fault ourselves, both the church community and the civic community, and what has developed. We've developed into, for some reason, we've lost a sense of family and sense of community, have gotten caught up into individualism and narcissism. And if you're doing that, then if you're a parent, then you don't teach your child how to live. The family is the place where you teach the children and the members how to share, how to delay their gratification so that the other person can have what they need. The family is sort of the preschool.
Mm.
For life in the community, in the church. The church is, you know, like is the second school, and then you move through while you're having your knowledge developed in school. And see, I hate to remember when the old folks used to tell me when I was a child, I used to say, "Oh my God!" But I'm at the stage now. I'm saying when I was a child. When I was a child,
right.
I grew up in the west side of Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And my parents were the senior parents. So they helped the next couple when their kids were coming. The couples would come and my mother would counsel them. The whole block was an extended family. Mm-hmm. We had what we call play brothers and play sisters.
That's right.
The families knew that they could drop their kids off, because I had four siblings that were living with me at the time, and we all had peers, and their parents all knew they could land in our yard, land in our apartment, our house,
right.
Land on our front porch, and they would be safe.
Our thanks to Deacon John and Sister Jamie. Now stick around, we'll hear what's going on at Catholic Charities after a short break.
We invite you to watch Catholic Chicago this weekend, featuring a conversation with Cardinal Blaise Cupich and video highlights from across the Archdiocese. Here's host Todd Williamson.
We'll talk with Cardinal Blaise Cupich about worldwide protocols put in place by the Holy See following the historic meeting in Rome on the protection of children. And we'll give you a behind-the-scenes look at the televised Sunday Mass from Mercy Home for Boys and Girls.
Watch Catholic Chicago Friday at 7 p.m. on Chicago Loop Cable, Channel 25, and Sunday afternoon at 3 on the Comcast Network, Channel 100.
Rich Daniels is the director of the City Lights Orchestra and president of the Archdiocese of Chicago's Immigration Ministry Advisory Board.
It's about a safe background for the people who live here. It's about safe haven for those who want to come. And it's about a legal path that has sensible limits to it, that doesn't take $30,000 in legal fees to acquire. It doesn't take 16 years or 12 years to get yourself into that position. It really lacks any compassion and love for those people who really want to be a part of this country.
The Immigration Ministry promotes a society where immigrants are welcomed and where their cultural gifts are celebrated.
My goodness, this country would not be where we are today were it not for the immigrants from Ireland, from Poland, from Italy, from name it. It's just an amazing array of individuals who've come to our shores seeking a better life for themselves and their family.
Please support the Immigration Ministry by attending the Keep Hope Alive benefit Monday evening, May 13th, hosted by Cardinal Blaise Supich. For more information, call 312-534-8383. That's 312-534-8383.
Welcome back to Catholic Chicago Week in Review, where we bring you highlights of Archdiocese of Chicago radio programs that can be heard Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 in the morning on WNDZ 750 AM. In the next 15 years, the number of Illinois seniors will rise by 36%. As our population ages, Catholic Charities is committed to helping our senior citizens. Catholic Charities President Monsignor Michael Boland and his guests discussed services offered at the Catholic Charities Senior Centers and the upcoming Senior Unity Mass.
We're having a conversation this morning with Kathy Breedeman and Rob Boyd about our senior centers, and we're specifically talk today a little bit about the Argento Senior Center out in Chicago Heights, Calumet City. And also now we're going to talk a little bit about with Katie Breedeman. And now she's, as you all know, is the editor of the Teenager News. Now it must be fun to be the editor of probably one of the most sought-after publications, because there's so everywhere I go, there are seniors who talk about the teenager, you know, waiting for it to come, or because it just, you know, it is interesting, even in this day of age, there's not much that's just geared right for them, whether they be the stories, the puzzles, all those different kinds of things. And so it's really kind of an exciting thing. I know many people, where I say it's most read, because, I mean, how many are on the subscription list about?
So we've got a readership of over 200,000, and this year Teenager News is celebrating 50 years of publication in Catholic Charities, and it's truly an honor to be the editor.
Yeah, it's really great, because there, it's one of those things that goes out, but there are so many people that it's passed around.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Or people go see their parents or grandparents or whatever, and or aunts and uncles, and they sit down and they're reading it, or the person is talking about what they just read in the Teenager. It is funny, because it is, I mean, it's developed, I mean, you know, in its origin, it was really a way to connect the parishes with seniors, which was at that time a new phenomena 50 years ago.
Right.
They did, you know, parishes were starting senior clubs or senior centers, and there were all these activities, and they, you know, the Teenager with through Catholic Charities also did a lot of trips all around. So it was really a way of bringing seniors out of their neighborhoods and their communities. And actually, it's really, it has a tremendously great reputation, you know, and so it must be kind of cool, because I'm sure you get that as well from a lot of people. And
I do. It's, people are so committed to it. They are longtime readers, and they are very passionate about which parts of the paper that they go to first.
Oh yes.
And so we don't mess with the format too much. We keep it very similar to the way it's been for a long time, and we're okay with that, and so are they.
Yes. And I think they really are very vocal in the sense of how they like it and what they like to read. And but again, it's, you know, even just having at different times of the year, having whether it was about before tax season to talk about certain specific things that really somebody might not be telling them about what they should be aware of and different things. So it is really a great resource, and I hear that all the time.
I agree. It's a great opportunity for us to share with readers all the services Catholic Charities provides. Many of them the readers don't know about. We're about to do an article on the legal assistance program at Catholic Charities that provides assistance on so many levels that maybe seniors don't know that these services are available to them if they need it.
Right. Even if it's like just something where they can call somebody about a senior, I mean, about an issue they're seeing, and just to get some advice.
Right.
You know, whether it's a senior center to go to or an illegal issue that they might be facing. So these are all, you know, or getting the Meals on Wheels or connecting with different people. Because what happens is, it's just like all of us, sometimes we can read stuff and it doesn't resonate with us. But then there's a certain point in life when we might know someone who could use some of these services. So I think for the family members, it's really kind of a nice thing as well. But for the senior, it's just really great because a lot of them have friends. So they says, well, you know, we don't see them much anymore. Maybe we should try to reach out, connect them, or call somebody. You know, so it's really a great thing. And I'm sure you hear that. Do you have any stories about some of the readers who've enjoyed something in the book?
I definitely do. Thank you. You know, oftentimes we'll have, I just had a gentleman recently call from Lake Geneva, and he said, I live here, but my son lives in Bourbonnais, Illinois, and we like to talk about, you know, Keenager together. Can you add him to the mailing list? I said, absolutely. But, you know, on a more serious note, recently a gentleman called and said he'd been trying to care for his wife in their home, but he and she realized recently that it was getting beyond what he could do for her. He asked for information about Catholic Charities residences, and I gave it to him, along with information about our new home-to-stay home care program that, mm-hmm. that is offering assistance to seniors within their home. And I said, you know, I'm very sorry for the difficult time you and your wife are going through. And the gentleman said to me, well, there are times in life when you have to do things that you don't want to do. And he said, but we are just so grateful that Catholic Charities is there to help us now.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that to be just so poignant and mm-hmm. you know, powerful.
Right, right. And it is something that sometimes they just don't know, and it's very private. They really want to have a conversation, and, you know, it gives them a chance to give information, you know, if they can read information, or it sparks something like maybe we can get help from somebody. And I think that's what's really, you know, an important part, because, you know, even trying to go through the morass of services that are available, but to know which one they might be available for or not, and no one answers the phone and all that, you know, when they call different bureaucracies. And that's why it's so important that when they call, that someone does talk to them and someone can listen to them, or invite them into a center, or invite them into some place where they can actually be heard and deal. Because it is frightening when you think about, you know, what the alternatives are, and they don't really know. And especially if there's children live far away, you know, other states, or they never had children. So there's just a lot of things that there's people that do face them, that all of a sudden it becomes, all of a sudden it's like, you know, they never expected this, you know, whatever it is,
right.
You know, whether it's an illness or a fall or other things, you know. So those are really challenges. I know that, like I said, a part of the beginning, there's, you know, the Senior Unity Mass really was really a time to bring all the seniors from around the Archdiocese and invite them to come together for Mass and for a hot lunch. Maybe we could talk a little bit about that.
Of course. Thank you, Monsignor. We're so looking forward to welcoming all seniors to this 46th annual event. It's going to be held on Thursday, June 13th at the St. Casimir Mother House, which is located at 2601 West Marquette Road in Chicago. Mass begins at a new time this year, 11 a.m., and it will be followed by a free hot lunch and an information fair where seniors can learn about a variety of services that can help them in their lives. We have flowers, gifts, and some terrific raffle prizes this year, and we can't wait to see who the lucky winners will be.
That's great.
Most of all, we just enjoy seeing the seniors visit with each other, and we enjoy, you know, renewing our friendships with them. And the staff and the sisters of St. Casimir work very hard to make this a very happy occasion for everybody.
Go to CatholicCharities.net to find out how you can support the many ministries of Catholic Charities. Dawn Fitzpatrick and Ryan Lentz of our Office of Human Dignity and Solidarity had a great visit this week with Mark Curran, the former sheriff of Lake County. They talked about the Immigration Ministry's upcoming benefit called Keep Hope Alive.
So I know that we're giving you an award for your generous work and dedication for advancing our mission for immigrants at the Archdiocese and beyond, certainly. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, I know you have a conversion story when it comes to immigration. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Sure. I was elected sheriff back in 2006. I served from 2006 to 2018 mm-hmm. in Lake County, Illinois. And when I first came into office, most of my background had been as a prosecutor, mm-hmm. county, state, and federal. So, I very much believed in the rule of law. And, I guess it was the day after President Obama was elected, if you will, November of 2008. And I was asked to go speak at the seminary in Mundelein. Mm-hmm. And, I was not a supporter of President Obama. So I was kind of in a bad mood and was ripping into all the problems with the Democratic Party and where this was going to be going. And Cardinal George was peppering me with questions on immigration and, tried to explain, why we needed immigration reform, what the church's teachings were on it. And, initially I was kind of taken aback and I thought, church has enough problems, Cardinal, why don't you worry about cleaning up the abuse scandal and leave the politics to, those of us that know more about it. But then I delved deeper and I looked into the whole concept of a rule of law. And really the absolute truth is that the borders were wide open for mm-hmm. decades. We had the immigration reform bill in 1986 that President Obama signed, President Reagan signed, but we never did anything really to secure the border. And I think it was in large part because we desperately needed the labor. Mm. So, there might have been a sign at the border that said, do not enter, but there was a much larger sign that said, help wanted. Mm. And the reality was, I worked at country clubs. I was not a country club kid. I worked at country clubs growing up. And I knew all these Mexican guys that worked there. And they didn't have papers, and they'd come and work in the summer, and they'd go back in the winter, and it was that easy to do so. Mm. And then, 9/11 happened, and other things happened, and we started, even with 9/11, we didn't start clamping down right away. It took years to do that. Mm-hmm. But then the borders became secured more so, not completely, and people were here that had been here for a long period of time, and they had families here. And so, Cardinal George, one of the things you said to me was that immigration is a pro-life issue.
Yeah.
And the dignity of the human being, that, we have to be consistent in that, in the way we treat people. And also, the Catholic Church believes in the nuclear family. That ideally we want a father and a mother. Mm-hmm. And we were breaking up families.
Right.
And the way we were going about it with immigration enforcement, wasn't ideal, and then we needed a reform bill. So from that point on, I desperately worked for immigration reform, and I traveled around the country, met with Vice President Biden on a number of occasions. Wow. Met with Speaker Ryan, met with all the Senator Lindsey Graham. You name it, I got to meet with them.
Mm-hmm.
Grover Norquist flew me into his Wednesday audience, which is a big thing in Washington, where the biggest powerful corporate people all attend. And we should have passed an immigration reform bill. We passed it out of the House 62-38 when Boehner was Speaker and then Ryan, and they never called the bill because of the Hastert rule. They had to have a majority of the House to call the bill. So the bill died in the Senate, and President Trump, he did run on some anti-immigrant rhetoric. I'm not going to say he didn't, but he inherited a train wreck as far as immigration and where we're at right now. We don't have an immigration reform bill because of that. But ultimately, the Gospel of Matthew says, I was a stranger and you welcomed me.
Yes.
And, I remember I was at Notre Dame one time for a football game. I went to Mass at the Basilica afterwards, and was, I just remember because it was packed. It was Boston College, and it was so all the kids, you know, was bigger attendance than usual. We were out the door. But I remember the homily was on the Gospel of Matthew. The priest said, you want to know what your judgment looks like, your eternal judgment looks like. Well, this is the best we have in Scripture to go on. So God's going to ask you that question, you know, what did you do for the immigrant? What did you do for the stranger? And, you know, you're going to say that, are you going to say, Lord, I didn't see you, you know, and then you're going to be on the wrong side of the equation. So ultimately, as Catholics, we very much believe in this. The reality is that we still desperately need the labor. As a country, we don't reproduce. We're down to 1.7 because, you know, people don't identify with you know, the traditional values. And
right.
So we need the labor, number one. We have no young workforce coming up behind it, but for the immigrants. And, you know, beyond that, all the faith entities are with us as far as immigration. And ultimately, law enforcement knows that the worst thing we can do is continue to be in a limbo status. So we need an immigration reform bill. It's not going to happen now because the Democrats don't want President Trump to have a win. But ultimately, you know, that's the reality. And, you know, Dawn, I call it as I see it. As you know, I don't really care about political party.
Right.
There's bad guys on both sides.
Sure. Absolutely. So, I mean, and it's just interesting that you're showing, because we often talk about, you know, a consistent ethic of life and how important it is to recognize life is sacred from conception and natural death. And you're pretty much outlining for us, you know, how this issue is related to what people would consider a traditional pro-life issue, in knowing that we, you know, we're not you know, procreating the way we used to, because people don't recognize the need to have children. And of course, here are people that want to come serve us and certainly to be here in this country and to join us in a legal way and in a, you know, certainly a productive way. And in some cases, that's, you know, being made really difficult. So,
yeah, I'll tell you something. In the, what made it difficult is the immigration reform bill, the Gang of Eight passed, Marco Rubio and Lindsey Graham and Jeff Flake and McCain on the one side, and then the Democrats, Schumer and that group. That was a good bill.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it was hundreds of pages long, but two-thirds of the bill dealt with border security.
Sure.
And, you know, ultimately, you know, when I talked to an Illinois congressman that lost, and I would say, you know, you need immigration reform. You got to do something, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he'd say, well, we're not going to do anything until we secure the border. And, you know, I'm a lawyer. You know, I'm a smart enough guy. You don't get to secure the border until you do something with the people that have been here. That's the nature of governing is all about compromise. So they didn't pass the bill in the Senate, and shame on them. And, you know, the Tea Party, for all that, you know, people think it was all good. You know, our hearts need to be right. And and we got killed, and we've left this country in a total mess right now with the border.
Okay, so we are talking with former Sheriff of Lake County, Mark Curran, and he will be receiving an award at our Keep Hope Alive benefit for the Immigration Ministry of the Archdiocese of Chicago on Monday, May 13th, which is less than 2 weeks away. Time's flying, isn't it, Mark?
Yes.
And this will be held at the IBEW Local 134 Union Hall on South Martin Luther King Drive in Chicago. There's free parking. That's really unusual, right? You can come, and just for $75, you can get a ticket for the reception, which begins at 7. Or you could donate $300 and get a VIP ticket, which will get you an extra hour with Cardinal Supich, which is very exciting. He'll be there as well. So I'd like to invite everybody to come to this benefit, and you can certainly find out more information if you go to CatholicsandImmigrants.org, or you call 312-534-8383, and you'll get to meet our wonderful former Sheriff of Lake County, Sheriff Mark Curran, along with Cardinal Supich and others. So,
can I just say one last thing?
Okay,
you know,
quick.
The Office of Immigrant Affairs will help fund their office. Atlanta Segura, they do awesome work. So this is not the political end of it. This is really just being the Catholic to the person in need. You know,
yes.
Maybe you don't have time to go
down and help love the person at the border, provide them, you know, whatever you can legally. Mm-hmm. But by giving money to this organization, you'll ensure that you did your part.
Absolutely. And this is all about accompaniment and helping people in need who need friends and love. And that's what the ministry is all about.
You can register for the Keep Hope Alive event by going to our website, archchicago.org. You'll find a link to Keep Hope Alive on our homepage. Next up, we'll hear the latest from our Catholic sisters and deacons back after a short break.
Rich Daniels is the director of the City Lights Orchestra and president of the Archdiocese of Chicago's Immigration Ministry Advisory Board.
It's about a safe background for the people who live here. It's about safe haven for those who want to come. And it's about a legal path that has sensible limits to it, that doesn't take $30,000 in legal fees to acquire. It doesn't take 16 years or 12 years to get yourself into that position. It really lacks any compassion and love for those people who really want to be a part of this country.
The Immigration Ministry promotes a society where immigrants are welcomed and where their cultural gifts are celebrated.
My goodness, this country would not be where we are today were it not for the immigrants from Ireland, from Poland, from Italy, from name it. It's just an amazing array of individuals who've come to our shores seeking a better life for themselves and their family.
Please support the Immigration Ministry by attending the Keep Hope Alive benefit Monday evening, May 13th, hosted by Cardinal Blaise Supich. For more information, call 312-534-8383. That's 312-534-8383.
Hi, my name is Craig. I was homeless for 2 years. Then I met Miss Ramona, a case manager at Catholic Charities. She found a place for me to live and is helping me with a resume and finding a job. I feel safe and away from the gun violence I know too well, having been a victim of it. The more I meet with Catholic Charities, the better I feel. They have changed my life. They're called Chicago's Good Samaritans, but to me, they are turnaround experts. Care to help? Visit CatholicCharities.net.
Welcome back to Catholic Chicago Week in Review on Relevant Radio, 950 and 930 a.m. I'm Jim Dish at the Archdiocese of Chicago's Radio TV office with highlights of local Catholic radio programs that can be heard Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 in the morning on WNDZ 750 a.m. This past Thursday, Sister Lavina Frances Pamet and Sister Mary Kay Brooks had a very informative conversation about the plight of immigrants.
Sister Mary Kay, you're in Dallas right now, correct? You just got back?
I'm in Dallas. I just got back from a mission trip to Douglas, Arizona, where we have four school sisters of Notre Dame who provide an opportunity to witness firsthand what is happening at the border and help people discern and see for themselves and make their own opinions. At this particular time, we had five young women from our school, a Notre Dame Prep High School in Baltimore. So I want to give a shout out to Kelsey, Madison, Laura Ann, Katie, Miguela, and the two teachers, Terry and Steve, who journeyed with me on this wonderful opportunity to really have firsthand information and experiences about what's happening at the border. These four sisters that live in Douglas have a phenomenal network of people that they work with and connect with. So they together coordinate this experience. So we not only go to Douglas, we go across into Mexico, into the city that's just literally on the other side of the wall. They would be your neighbors. They would be across the street, down the block, had not the border or the very fine line of what is U.S. territory and what is Mexican territory that would divide us. It was a phenomenal experience, and I have so much to talk about and not enough time. It will take me days to figure out how to process all this information.
Wow.
But I want to wrap it and tell the story about in the lens of discernment. Mm-hmm. These five young women did come down to, as part of their high school experience. They're graduating soon at the end of the month, and they're hoping to somehow put all the practices that they have learned in our sponsored high school about social justice and how does that work and how will they allow an urgent need that's happening right now in our country to touch their hearts. mm-hmm. but with informed, with concrete information, not just the little sound bites that we get from the social media or the news, you know, and you're not sure what's true, what's a little bit off or what's a little slanted. And so they wanted firsthand experience, and it was a great week to be with them. And I'm very grateful that they allowed me to participate mm-hmm. in this experience with them.
And it sounds like you were really able to hear a lot of the narratives from all sides, right?
We tried to give them an experience from all sides. So we start, they fly into Tucson. We went to the court system. Very first thing right after they got off the airplane is we went to the court system in Tucson to where we were, where we watched young men come in shackles before the judge to admit that they crossed the border illegally. And so they now have, they didn't come with a record, but they now have a record in the U.S. because they admitted to crossing illegally. But I was so struck that here is this line of eight young men standing in front of the judge in shackles. And it's holy, for me, it was a remembrance of Holy Week where it's Jesus in front of Pilate being judged. And some of these men could not speak Spanish because they are coming from an indigenous part of Mexico in the very south part, and they don't know Spanish. And so the question was, did you learn Spanish in school? And these men could barely respond, I did not go to school
wow.
in Spanish, but Spanish is not their first language. So it's really an economic issue when you get down to it. And all the people that we talked to throughout, whether it was a rancher, whether it was Border Patrol folks, whether it was folks doing humanitarian aid on the Mexican side or on the Arizona side, all of them said it's an economic issue mm-hmm. and policies need to change in order to fix this
right.
urgent need.
Now, is this the first time that you've done this through Baltimore High School or your high school in Baltimore? Or has this become a little bit more regular? Because you do have a couple of places where you minister, right?
Right. For this particular high school in Baltimore, Notre Dame Prep, they come regularly to the border. So it's a highly sought after mission trip for the girls. They have to apply. They have to really want to be informed and have this experience for them. So it's something that we try to do. They also go on other, there were three mission trips that the senior girls were going on at this time. One was Douglas, Arizona, one was in Ecuador, and one was in Mississippi. So there's a variety of ways to do social justice that our community and our schools are trying to provide our students, or especially our young women. Notre Dame Prep is an all-girls school in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. No, that's really wonderful. Because mm-hmm. last time you talked about also a program was in St. Louis. And, of course, that
right.
was a lot of discernment as well, which is also one of the skills that is so much needed in the world today.
Following Sister Lavina and Sister Mary Kay, we heard from Deacons Richard Hudzik and Dave Brunsick. They introduced us to Deacon Michael Facchetti, who is very active with Catholic Relief Services.
With us today, both Dave and Mike Facchetti. And Mike is talking about his experiences with Catholic Relief Services, a.k.a. CRS. Now, Mike, just before the break, we were going to get into some of the particular things that CRS might be doing globally, to put some flesh on the bones of its social its involvement in alleviating social ills. What are some of the things that CRS is doing around the world?
Sure. Well, the majority of the programs, of course, benefit the poor overseas. And the program really focuses on emergency relief and recovery. Once CRS meets the immediate needs for
What's an emergency response? What's that look like?
Well, that can be anything from hurricanes to typhoons. We've had several crises that have just taken place in Africa.
So is this food and shelter?
Food and shelter, really whatever people need on the ground to survive, to live. Basic thing, you know, things that we take for granted. Food, water, shelter. eventually CRS will transition into areas of rebuilding infrastructure, reconstruction of buildings, towns, villages. And then eventually, in something that's a longer continuum, they're working in areas of education as well as the agricultural field.
Now, what are – well, let me ask this. Do you know how many different countries around the world CRS is working in?
Right. Over 100 at this point. And, you know, the need when it's there, really there aren't any limitations. And they're working with – well over 130 million people. Those are really big numbers.
130 would be the beneficiaries in one way or another of these programs?
Correct.
So you're talking Africa, Latin America, Asia?
All over the world, right. You know, I think some people would hone in on or focus in on their work in Africa, but they're really all over the world, I think, wherever the need is. But predominantly Africa and Latin America would be some of the major programs that they have.
Now, you recently had the opportunity to see some of this work for yourself, up close and personal, as the expression goes. Tell us about this trip that you took.
Yes, well, it was an opportunity to go with a delegation of 11 priests and deacons to Uganda, to the Pearl of Africa, as it's referred to. And it's been a life-transforming experience with many blessings that I continue to unpack. Really stories of hope. We spent days in the Bidi refugee camp. For those that aren't familiar, it is the largest refugee camp in the world at over 230,000 people in that particular location in northwest Uganda, just on the border with South Sudan.
Now, are these Sudanese fleeing war? Is that what that is?
Correct. And what's interesting is the majority of the refugees are Christian that have been fleeing a lot of the sociopolitical upheaval and instability. And I know there's a change in government right now as we speak, but it's still very unstable. And the refugee camp has been developing over the course of decades. It actually was started in 1965. And so CRS has been working there for several decades in assisting those there in terms of areas of shelter, water, sanitation, hygiene issues. I observed school construction for students there. And one particular observation was an engineering miracle, as I would call it, where water was piped from below the ground in the middle of nowhere and powered through a generator through solar power to about 2 miles away to a water distribution center, which now serves over 20,000 people that can now have fresh water. You know, dysentery would be a huge issue and sanitation issue. So a lead engineer from CRS, for example, was putting the resources provided to CRS through wonderful donors and people that support CRS into, as I was saying, faith into action, if you will, a wonderful thing.
Now, you've got the opportunity to talk to people about this good work. What do you want to tell people about the faith dimensions of what you saw, observed, and experienced in your trip in Uganda?
Well, first of all, I think for me, it really brought home what it means to be Catholic. And one of the mantras that I was hearing and I was experiencing, it wasn't always about creed but need. So it's not that we help others because they're Catholic, but because we are. And so those that are in need are provided assistance from Catholic Relief Services. But I also observed more directly this idea of the 2 feet of service. On the one hand, we talk about direct charity, you know, feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, but moving toward long-term structural and societal change that can be lasting, permanent, and what is going to build up society, in this case, for Ugandans, helping Ugandans. The other part of that, I think, is that when we look at the opportunity to put our faith in action in the social mission of the church, I think our baptismal call for all of us calls us to get out there, to take risks, maybe to get out of our comfort zones. And whether that's out of our parishes here, just within the Archdiocese of Chicago and our own communities, but to see what other opportunities we have to put a face of Christ on ourselves and show that to other people that are in need. And so, you know, as Pope Francis would say, you know, we need to smell like the sheep that we are serving, and we need to take risks. We need to get out there and get dirty.
Was there a particular experience that you had, Mike, that touched your heart while you were there?
One of the more emotional experiences was it's a project that is relatively new that is a family reunification program that for years many families, parents were giving up their children to what we would refer to as orphanages because they didn't know any better in terms of what resources might be out there. Maybe they didn't have many. And so making a decision for what they thought was best for their children. But in the long run, you know, we believe as Catholics, as Christians, and others as well, that the family is really the center of society. And without that, we lose hope, we lose structure, we lose the essence of who we are. And so I was able to meet women and men, families that are now being assisted by CRS in bringing children back to their families.
How, why did that touch your heart?
Well, it was one of many programs that we observed, but the personal element that touched my heart was the ability to see parents, mothers, fathers, as well as children being brought back together. As a matter of fact, I had met little Grace, 5 years old, who would meet her siblings, her teenage siblings, along with the extended family for the first time in over 10 years. They were in orphanages, and through the assistance of Catholic Relief Services, they were provided kind of what we would call microloan support in terms of reentry into the family, education, schooling, and basic support within the village for them to get back together as a family and move toward a brighter, more hopeful and loving future. So it was wonderful to see and to hear their stories personally and to be welcomed into their homes in this village outside of Kampala.
So just, I guess, one more small step, but immensely significant for that one small family that you were blessed to witness. That's a beautiful thing. Now, if we want to help CRS, there's a couple of questions I want to ask you about. One is that I know my beloved grandchildren are listening, and other people's grandchildren, our own children, we as adults listening to the show. How might we open our children's eyes to the work that CRS does? Any thoughts there?
Well, a lot of people, when they think of CRS or Catholic Relief Services, is Rice Bowl.
And what's that?
Which we just finished during Lent. And this is an opportunity to create awareness, to understand stories of hope from around the world, and to tithe, to provide charity, you know, one of the three pillars of Lent, and provide resources to those around the world that are in need. Interesting enough, I should mention briefly, is that a percentage of the money that's raised as well through Rice Bowl goes back into projects here within the Archdiocese that are grant-specific. And that process started just yesterday with applications from around the Archdiocese for grants to help with food pantries and other charitable works.
Now, the manipulable, the hands-on thing that the kids can get is this little box that into which they can put their coinage. Is that
correct?
And that's collected during the course of Lent.
Right. And of course, there's an educational component. When I've been able to go to different parishes throughout the Archdiocese, it's really about educating the students and making them aware of our brothers and sisters. Many that they're helping are their age. So I'm able to show, you know, if I'm doing presentations with slides, pictures of children just like them, their same age, that just need resources to meet basic needs in life.
A reminder that you can hear that entire program and all our local Catholic radio shows by going to archchicago.org and clicking on Radio TV. Thanks for listening to us every Saturday morning here on Relevant Radio 950 and 930 AM. I am Jim Dish for Catholic Chicago Week in Review. Enjoy the weekend, everyone.
Join us every Saturday morning for Catholic Chicago Week in Review. You can stream our programs live or listen to past programs by visiting our website, archchicago.org, and clicking on Radio TV. And please connect with Catholic Chicago on social media.